Podcasting 2.0 for January 23rd, 2026, episode 248, Thingamajigger. Hey, everybody, welcome from a very cold, cold America. It is time for Podcasting 2.0. This is it. This is where we talk about podcasting. It says it right there on the label. This is the board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. In fact, we are the only boardroom that doesn't host a party at Davos. I'm Adam Curry here in the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who codes with Claude and conquers with confidence. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave Jones.
I've had Robbie Dupree in my head for like days now. It will not
Robbie,
go away.
Robbie Dupree? Which song?
Steal away. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. Why don't we steal away?
Steal away.
Really? That's
into the night.
That's in hot rotation on Yacht Rock.
Is that a Yacht Rock song?
That's a total Yacht Rock song. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You ever listen to Yacht Rock on like, do you have a Sirius XM?
No, I don't have Sirius. No.
Oh, yeah, Sirius XM has a Yacht Rock channel.
Did Robbie Dupree have any other songs?
No, of course not. No, it's like it's Robbie Dupree. It's Rupert Holmes with the Pina Colada song. These are all yacht rock classics. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Eddie Money has to be on there somewhere.
Take my bone tonight. Sorry. Sorry.
Two tickets to paradise.
Hold on a second. Let's just go to the YouTubes. Let's see what comes up as Yacht Rock playlist.
Is REO Speedwagon, is that Yacht Rock?
Keep on loving you. Yeah, I would say, what is this? What do we have here? Ooh, how come I'm not hearing anything? Oh, here we go. Remember Key Largo?
Yeah.
Bertie Higgins. That's good.
The Yacht Rock is almost all one hit wonders.
Here's a whole playlist. Let me see. Oh yeah, this Kenny Loggins, absolutely Yacht Rock all the way.
Number two on the list.
Yeah. Number two on the list is there it is. There's your Robbie Dupree.
I cannot get it out of my head.
Yeah, baby. What a fool believes. Oh yeah.
And then the classic.
Remember this one?
Boss Skaggs?
No. Come on, you know it.
Is this Daryl Hall & Oates?
No.
I need to hear his voice. Where it's
rocking it here for you on Yacht Rock. This is Player. Their hit, Baby, Come Back.
Oh yeah, Baby, Come Back.
Wow. This is and then of course we have the classic Seals and Crofts. That's right. And then we have, Oh, yes. Classic.
Down in Jamaica, when
yeah.
Down in Jamaica, they
remember On and On? One more.
On and on.
This is also classic Yacht Rock, everybody. Looking Glass. Who could forget them? Brandy, you're a fine one.
Brandy.
There's a point.
There has to be Little River Band on there somewhere.
Oh, no doubt.
Wow.
I have not listened to these in a long time. I've been stuck in the Christian hits, man.
Little River Band.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nails it.
Reminiscing? Is that the one?
Reminiscing has got to be on there.
Hurry, don't be late.
Late. I can hardly wait, I said to myself.
Yep. Wait. But a classic from Dr. Hook and his medicine show. Come on, baby.
Dr. Hook.
Remember Dr. Hook and he had that eye patch on with the cowboy hat?
The problem with Dr. Hook era of music is that it was all on 8-track.
Oh,
and
those
things vanished. Like, I mean, like nobody had, people have vinyl, but 8-tracks didn't survive. Like they melted from time or something.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
That you can still find them in like, you know, some classic cars. Like I looked at an El Camino the other day. Like
why did you look at an El Camino?
Oh, I really have wanted an El Camino for a long time. It's an SS. Beautiful.
Oh yeah. That's got you could get those with a 454 in them.
That's what it's packing, baby. The only problem is it is General Lee Orange.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's one thing to buy a classic.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. It's like, then I have to repaint it. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it had an 8-track.
Orange is a little much.
It had an 8-track in it. 8-track player, at least. I think that I should have looked and seen what was in there.
8-track sucks so bad. you had to switch and listen to a different song to rewind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You had to switch tracks. And you hear the heads go. Everybody, we're talking about podcasting now. Yeah, that's right. Yes, we are podcasting
Bitcoin
all over
orange,
the place.
Bitcoin orange.
congratulations to Sam Sethi and the kids over there at True Fans. Closed their round of funding was the big news today.
Nice.
On
okay.
Power. Yeah,
I haven't heard Power yet. So.
Yeah, it was interesting. Great. He was talking about, I was talking to some other hosting folks earlier this week about bot traffic. And so the way, if I understand it correctly, the way True Fans hosting will work is they will allow you to turn off bots. Now, if you turn off the bots, that means that Apple, which appears to be one of the biggest bots these days, because it's sucking everybody down for transcripts and chapters and whatever else. The question is, what will happen if you block the Apple bots, which truly are using quite a lot of bandwidth?
So I've got this, I've got an interesting idea that I want to throw out to the boardroom here.
All right, boardroom, hello. Pay attention, everybody.
But I don't want to hog up the mic though. So if you can talk about it later. But
no,
it's related.
I mean, I think we both have some vibe coding to talk about. So
yeah,
we can do that now, or you can.
Talk about your vibe code,
dude?
What's up, dude?
Dude, I'm almost there. I have been wanting to get off of Windows for my podcasting ventures for years and years, years and years. And so because our mutual friend Paul had recommended to me to take a look at Omarchi, which is Arch Linux with, you know, with the tiling window manager. Oh, as they say, opinionated Linux.
it's Linux with even more David Hanemeyer Hansen is what it is.
Who's that? I don't know who that is.
DHH, the guy, the inventor of Ruby on Rails.
And okay.
He's the guy that, like, he's the mind behind the Omarchi.
Oh, hold on. We're not lit. I'm sorry. My mistake.
Oh.
Thank you, board meeting. Thank you, boardroom, for reminding me of that. This stuff needs to be automatic. So I loaded it up on, I figured I just need a test box. I still have that Surface Pro 6.
The one that was giving you trouble for a while.
Well, it wasn't giving me trouble. That was an older one. No, that was a different machine. This one was running as my, what do you call it? The one that had, like, what you use for your Bitcoin node, for your Albi.
Umbral?
Umbral, yeah. I was using it for an Umbral. But whatever reason, that just kept, I had to upgrade to the new, it became a mess. The Umbral over time, just, I felt,
I got my Umbral fixed, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Good. It's working. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been, and ever since I got the Start 9, that box is so rock solid. It's just running. I haven't looked. I mean, I pull up my Albi, I'm forgetting all kinds of low T, ladies and gentlemen, my helipad, you know, that kind of stuff. It's all on that box. Works great. Love it. Don't have to think about it. But so I decided I'll install Omarchi on this, because if it can install on this, which are notoriously messy hardware systems, I think the Surface Pro 6, just Surface in general, which I believe is now discontinued.
Completely unreliable hardware.
Yeah, unreliable. Yeah. Well, installed great. And
really?
Oh, yeah. Right out of the box. Nope. Well, no, that's not true. I had to do one thing for the Wi-Fi, which, of course, is very typical. But it was interesting because I've been using Gemini now. I've dropped Grok. Grok has dropped. But I started using Gemini mainly because I got a free, you know, pro account with my phone. And
I think that's the same thing that happened to Alex. He started using it because he got a free plan, like some free time on it for a few. It's like 3 months or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm all in because for research purposes, it's dynamite. And I'm in pro mode, so nothing is fast. It, you know, a question or a research topic can take easily a minute or a couple minutes to come back. But because it has access to Google search APIs and YouTube transcripts and all this stuff, it really has, it does great for research. And it gives me the sources so I can check where it's coming from. There's some bias in there, but, you know, but it's been very useful to me. So I jump into Gemini and I say, okay, here's what's going on. And right away, it's super helpful. Oh, this is not a problem. And it says, and by the way, you know, while we're doing this, just grab a USB cable, plug in your Galaxy 7Z Flip, because it knows I have that, of course. And that'll tether, no problem. And it did. And so I got the Wi-Fi fixed. I got the touch screen. Everything's working. And I did that at the kitchen table in maybe an hour, you know, and most of that time was just the install taking place. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, I am. And I say, listen, Gemini, I am ready to move my podcasting setup to, and I played for a day or two with Omarchi. I like the tiling window system. That is the way my brain works. I thought
you would like that. Yeah.
Oh, I really do. You know, and all keyboards, I'm a keyboard guy. I love keeping my hands on the keyboard, moving windows around, you know, different, and especially because it's a limited screen size. It's just, I'm blown away. You know, the super key space bar brings up the apps you want, type it in, launches. I mean, it just, it's kind of the way I've always wanted to work. Really nice. Sam, I'm ready to move off. It's like, let's start with something that has been impossible in my life. I want to take my Rodecaster Pro 2, and I want to be able to see all these devices. Wow. Pipewire and Helvum did the trick.
Really?
Yes. And
finally.
Yes. And so Helvum is really the, you know, that's really the magic sauce. Pipewire, by the way, is great. I mean, I've been, the last time I looked at this, it was, you know, Jack, what was it?
Jack system,
you know, wonky, breaks down, falls apart. Pipewire, amazing. And of course, the only thing that's really different between Windows when it comes to USB drivers and Linux is that you can plug in this, 16 channel USB device, which is basically what one of the devices, you know, because you have two different devices in the Rodecaster. One is the standard secondary out. It recognizes that, no problem. You plug the other one in, it's like it just shows you one. It doesn't show you the chat, like the mix minus device. So with Helvum, you can permanently map those two channels to for the system to recognize it as a device. And so now I can just pull up one of three devices exactly the way I'd want it on Windows. I'm like, okay, I've been waiting for this all my life. And Gemini walked me through it. Then I'm like, you know, okay, what am I missing that's on Windows that I don't have in this environment? Because in order to do my podcast, I have been working for years and years with MAirList. And MAirList is a commercial product, licensed product, but which is really for radio stations. But with it, I've been able to build this interface that I like. When in essence, I have eight players at the top of my screen, and when you, you can drag and drop a file into it, which I can do pretty quickly. And, you know, it's mapped to a MIDI controller. I have the Nano Control 2 from Korg, so I can control volume, start and stop, and I can dump the clip out. Those are basically the three things I do with it. And then I can zoom in on the waveform if I want to go back, and I can, you know, just by knowing, just by watching it when it plays, okay, we're going to go back 5 seconds, click here, and I'll start there. That's what we do with No Agenda all the time. So I tell Gemini this is what I want.
Surely you can run that in Wine. I'm not kidding. I mean, Wine is really good these days.
Screw Wine. But if we're gonna, I mean, the whole point of getting away from Windows is not to run a Windows app on Wine.
Okay, you're a nativist. Okay,
I want to be. If I'm gonna go native, I'm going commando, baby.
Fair enough.
Okay, I do not want to be running crap in Wine. And by the way, audio stuff notoriously iffy when it comes to Wine. So I just didn't want to go that route. So I say, you know what? Here's what I want to build. Within an hour, I replicated this whole system using, of course, Python, using the Qt UI framework.
Not GTK. Interesting choice.
No, Qt6. Very slick. It draws the waveforms. It does, I mean, everything. Then add to that Mido for the MIDI connection. I mean, I literally said, okay, I want to be able to map these buttons to these buttons on my MIDI controller. Boop, 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 boop. The code spits out. I run the code. And I can right click on a button, and then it can learn the MIDI control that I, which is easier, by the way, than the actual MR list. It's easier to do it in the system that I built. I mean, so basically, it's using GStreamer as the audio engine, so I can mix these different things together. The long story short is, within a week or two, I will be switched over, and. And I guess I'll open, because I made a repo. Woo! Look at me. But I'm gonna.
Did you make a repo? Are you gonna open source?
Not yet. Oh yeah, of course. I want everybody to enjoy and for people to improve upon it. But I mean, it's even better than what I had, because the way I work, and maybe not everybody is going to work this way, but I have a folder tree a file tree open in. In this MR list. And I categorize my clips by topic, and then there's JCD clips, and this is kind of the same for any podcast I do. So now another thing that was not possible with this other system is I can just scroll down to a clip, or if I want to use the mouse, just click once, boom, it occupies the next available player. And I was using the Everything search engine. If you're familiar with that, Everything search app.
No, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's an open source search app. It's really good. You can just say, okay, I only want it to index audio files. And so I've built into this file viewer, you know, a quick little shortcut. You type it in, you get all the, because, you know, I'm always looking for an old clip or something, or a jingle or something like that. And it populates the list, click, boom, it's loaded super fast. And so I'm doing all this stuff. And this is within an hour. I mean, sliders are working, faders are working, the mix is working. And then all of a sudden Gemini's like, oh, you ready to build the cart wall? I'm like, holy crap.
A what? A cart wall?
Cart wall. Yeah. This way you load up a whole bunch of stuff. Like, you know,
bombshell.
You know, that you can just, you have the, your little.
Oh, like a soundboard?
Yeah. That's thing? Cart wall. It came up with the name cart wall. And so I'm, which is correct. And I have to say, I was well impressed at the speed, at the context, window size, the cross chat understanding of, because at a certain point says, yeah, this will work great on your Surface Pro 6, which was a whole different window that I've been working on that with. I'm pretty impressed. to be able. Now, I still don't. I mean, basically, they're paying me extra money to do it because I don't see how my free account or even $20 a month can in any way compensate for the cycles that have been used making this. Mm-hmm. But holy mackerel, this is just, it's been exciting. It really has been. And this is, and so to say AI has improved my life in this area, yes. Yes.
I need a screenshot of your new app. I want to see it.
Okay.
I want to see what you've built, this MR list clone type mm-hmm. thingamajigger. Yeah, I want to see what it looks
in
like.
In fact, I'm going to call up the podcast thingamajigger. What is
please,
that?
Please, I want that to be your repo name.
The thingamajigger. My jigger, I got to write it down.
the podcast thingamajigger sounds great. Well, so I think this is the natural progression that people go through. You start with a chatbot. Then you start in the chatbot world, then you go to like in your IDE, whether it's Cursor or Junie in JetBrains or whatever you're like, you know, whatever this is, Copilot, some sort of add-on that's living in your IDE programmer tool with you. Then at some point you jump to the command line. You just have an independent agent that's just going to, this lives in the command prompt on the system, because that way it just has full access to everything. It just understands how to do everything on the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made that plunge with Claude Code.
Yes.
And, the first thing I had to do, there's this thing at my day job, and I'll describe this. There's an app that it's a production. There's two apps, and this is going to be interesting for a number of reasons. So there's two basically identical apps. They communicate with an in-house custom platform that we wrote. And all it does is takes a file and uploads it communicates with an API and uploads this file to the API.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it does, for reasons that are largely unimportant, there's two different routes this thing can take. So there has to be two separate apps. So there's two separate apps that are virtually identical, except for a few different, maybe 100 lines of code that are insignificant, that they're different between these two apps. What's always bothered me, that these apps were written maybe 7 years ago. They're .NET C# apps. They run in Windows. I wrote them in Visual Studio 2019, I think.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Uh-huh. So I wrote them in Visual Studio 2019, and the way they're monolithic, so they have the user interface for the app is basically just some configuration text boxes and a log window to just so we can keep track of everything. But these things are monolithic, so they have to just stay running on an open desktop all the time.
Hmm.
So so what I've wanted to do, I wrote them that way, and I just wasn't thinking about it. I just needed to get this thing done. And
you didn't realize you had to dedicate a machine to it full time, basically.
Yeah, and it has to stay open on a desktop all the time. So really, really, the only thing that
and this is running some Fortune 500's accounting. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, maybe. what I've been needing to do for years now, what I've been needing to do is spend the time to split this app into two parts.
Yeah, a back end that just runs and then a UI.
Exactly. A Windows service and a UI that'll talk to the service. And it's just like, that's not a hard thing to do. But it's going to take me 10 hours mm-hmm. to go through, create the new repos, copy paste over the code, do the testing, then create an IPC between the two.
What's an IPC?
inter-process communication channel. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So like a named pipe or a, you know, something like that where mm-hmm. these, where the front end can talk to the back end.
Just
the
use XML RPC, man. It's the future.
The soap.
Soap.
Yeah.
But, so inside, like, inside joke, everybody.
Yes, right. So this is my, like, who can peel off 10 hours to recreate a thing that already is working?
Right.
You know, and it's, you're not going to get anything for this. All you're going to get is once every few months when this thing crashes for some reason, you have to go restart it. And like, that's the only thing this does. Mm-hmm. So as usual, I can't just commit half a week to doing this. Right. So I was like, okay, perfect, perfect trial run for Claude Code. So I grab a copy of the repo, stick it into a directory, you know, by itself. So we, you know, we're not working on the live thing. And I'm like, okay, I describe to Claude, this is a C#.NET app that is monolithic. And I want you to split it in two parts. I want to have a UI that can, a backend Windows service that can be installable, and then a front end that communicates with the service to show me the logs and blah, blah. I just gave it a simple, maybe like a 3-line prompt. 15 minutes, it was done.
Yeah.
I copied it to the server, launched it, and it worked. Yeah. I never touched a single line of code.
Yeah.
And the thing that got me, and it also, it said, okay, I split it into three repos, a service repo, an IPC repo, and a UI repo. And I also created you two batch files, one to install the service.
It did that without even asking?
I never even asked for that.
Yeah.
And then I open up the UI. And it's the same UI I had before, but it stuck a new thing up there at the top showing me the status of the service and a start and stop button so I could restart it myself.
That's like, great.
I was blown away by this thing, but here's the kicker. So this was perfect. So I'm like, okay, this is great. I'm going to take the same prompt and do it on this other repo, which is basically an identical code base. I'm going to do it on this other repo and just change the name and say, do it to this other repo. Mm-hmm. I did it, completely different outcome.
Oh.
And this time, it did not split it into three repos. It split it into two.
Hmm.
They were differently named. It did not create the install service batch files. I tried to... So I created the install service batch file by hand, installed it. It installed, even it gave me a failure, but it still installed and started. And then I tried to run the UI. It would never connect to the back end. It was pretty much broken.
This is the frustration. This is exactly the frustration that I've had with. And was it in the same context window, or did you open up a new window for a new context, a new chat, or whatever you call it? I don't know how that works with Claude.
Yeah, new session.
Yeah, new session. Yeah, this is the frustration. The consistency is nowhere to be found.
I don't understand because I'm telling you these code bases are virtually identical, and I don't know if there's some sort of temperature that's involved.
No, temperature shouldn't be. Temperature, I believe, is exactly the issue. You know,
because it shouldn't be. The temperature on that the temperature on that sort of prompt should be zero. Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the actual temperature in the server farm. I believe that the humidity actually, I really think so. I really think that makes a difference. You know, the cooling was half a degree off, you get different results. And how frustrating is it? You can sit there and you can tell it 100 times, it will not create what you had in the previous session.
So the way I got around it is, as I said, so Claude does this very helpful thing. I'm not sure if Gemini does this or not, but one thing Claude has that's very helpful is when it creates it'll go into what it calls plan mode.
Yes. Yeah. The boardroom is talking about plan mode.
Okay. So plan mode, it'll take your prompt. You can go back and forth manually, but a lot of times it'll understand it needs to go into plan mode automatically. So it'll go into plan mode and it will essentially write a plan of what it's going to do.
Mm-hmm. And it will stick to its own plan.
It will. Yes. Yeah. And so the thing about this scenario is that, Claude leaves those plan files behind.
Ah.
So what I did was I said, okay,
take these. Plan files.
I started over. Yeah. And I said, look, I said, I added an extra little bit of prompt at the end and said, I've already done this conversion on another repo. Here's the plan file from that previous conversion. I want you to follow the same exact plan file as closely as possible.
Does it leave the plan files in the repo? Is that where it leaves it?
It leaves them in the Claude direct, like in its working directory.
Okay.
Outside mm-hmm. of its out mm-hmm. of the side of the repo. And this time it did it and it did it exactly right.
Wow.
Perfectly.
Wow.
I feel like it's all, so the sense I get from this is that it's sort of like the experience you have when you're doing the image generation stuff, where when you get a prompt and it gives you something really good.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's
improve.
You
this.
Want to save the prompt.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Change this and add this. No, we can't.
No, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. You really, if you ever get a good result from a prompt, you need to hang on to that prompt and keep it forever.
Yeah.
So that was my first out of the gate experience with Claude, but which I would say was highly successful. I mean, it saved me so many hours of work on a thing. Now, was it additive? Not really.
Well, it gave you the service start and stop button.
It did. Yeah. You know, you're right. And in your case, you were already on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
You've mostly replicated what you had before. The agent helped you do a sideways move, essentially.
Well, no. It has actually improved because all of the interface issues that I had with M Airless, which I would have loved to have it work differently, I just said, okay, implement this way. So, for instance, in M Airless, if you want to... if you want to do a pre-fade or listen, so you want to listen to something, for instance, end of show ISO. So if mm-hmm. I want to hear an end of show ISO and I want to, and so I'll get it from the ISO bot while you're talking, I'm listening to you in one ear. I'm listening. I'm pre-fade or listening to this ISO that I'm trying to get. And I set an in point and an out point, cause I don't have time to actually edit the file. So that's a whole different window that pops up. It's a whole different subsystem of M Airless that I'm working in. It also prohibits me from doing some other things with the live playout system. So now it's baked into it. So when I go to pre-fader mode, it just turns that one player into a different color. So I know mm-hmm. that it's in PFL mode. And then I can click in the timeline, set my in and out points, and I'm done. There's no extra mm-hmm. windows popping up, none of this stuff. And I can also, mm-hmm. I've also made it so I can select which interface I want the PFL to go to. So these little improvements, and then also the clip search system that I did, that was two different applications. So I've baked that into one now. So definitely additive for me.
I think Leo Laporte is right in his characterization of this stuff as, what the real thing that is happening right now is an unlocking of the ability to have hyper personalized software.
Yes. And it is enabling individuals like myself who have a concept of systems. So I understand Linux, I understand command line, I understand bash, I understand some Python. I understand that, I understand the basics of the computer, so the networking, the audio, I understand all these core principles and have had interactions with them, albeit very poor interactions throughout my life, usually with mm-hmm. destructive results. To be able to able to prompt the right things. So if someone just sits down and said, okay, I want to have a podcast playout system, I doubt it would come up with anything like this. Doesn't really exist. Even the way I customized MAirList is not the way anyone else has customized it. So we may see very small companies that provide software products or services that they can spin up really quickly. So, I mean, like us, like Godcaster in a way. I mean, I've created two or three products that would not be here because we only really have one and a half, you know, one developer on the back end. That's you. Mm-hmm. And so I've been able to spin up these different products and optimize them over time just by knowing what the customer wants, knowing what I want to build for the customer, and having enough understanding of the systems to be able to coax the AI into coding what I want. And the actual coding part is just, it's like a layer on top of it.
Yeah. I think like I'm afraid to let it touch code, existing code bases that I'm already, that are important. Like I've not used any AI on the podcast index API backend. I'm talking about the API server itself, you know. I have not let it touch anything in that. I haven't let it touch anything in Godcaster. There's code bases I'm really afraid to let it
mess with. Sure. And that's understandable. But I'm just freewheeling my ass off here, brother. I'm like, woohoo! Sell it. Yeah. People will buy this. Yeah.
I mean, like the thing, and it's like, I think I'll get there one day when I sort of figure out, okay, I can bring it in to help me do this particular, for instance, the other day I needed, this was for, something I was doing in Godcaster. I needed a PHP function that would just take any string as input and just return nothing but and strip out any characters that were not alphanumeric. Mm-hmm. Super simple. I've written this function 100 times. It's not hard. It's like one line of code. If you do it right. And so I was like, well, but like it was faster for me to just ask Junie to write the function. It was like, boom, done. And I copy and pasted it in.
Yeah.
Like I can see it. Like it's kind of putting out fires. It was easy. It was quicker for me to have the thing write it than to go hunt down another repo, copy and paste the thing I wrote out of it.
Yep.
Like that was faster. So I think the other thing that I observed with Claude, and this, I'm going to take this back to Silicon Valley, just grossness. This is just the Silicon Valley. I'm Anthropic. I think, are they Silicon Valley or are they?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Definitely. Okay. This is their way. So I did the $20 a month plan.
They got your money. We got one. Mm-hmm.
We got one. And it would, so that first repo that I asked to do the conversion on that Windows app, it used up like 80-something% of my usage window.
Oh, okay. Not of your credits, of your usage window.
So the way this thing works is you have time slices where you have an overall credit amount that lasts for like a week. And then you have a credit amount for the month. Then you also have individual time slices. There's one that's a week long, and then there's one that's like hours long. And if you bump up to your usage window, usage limit for that window, it'll come back and say, you know, hey, you've used almost everything for this session. You're going to have to wait until 1 o'clock,
right,
for things to reset.
Mm-hmm.
And so the effect this has, they give you two options. Now, here's your options in the app is you can either stop and wait for your time window to reset,
or upgrade,
or, Or upgrade, exactly. Or you can upgrade. And the next plan is $200.
Yep.
You
know,
well, it goes from 20 to 200.
But see, this is what I've been saying. And I don't think that's a Silicon Valley ickiness. It's they've been giving this away. They've been losing 90% on on their cash flow, because it, you know, for every dollar you spend, they're giving you $10 worth of compute. So they have and 11 Labs has figured this out, because we use 11 Labs for our we call it Your Town Live. So you can do a couple of different things. You can load up the podcast. You can have the most recent episode from a podcast play in this live 24-hour stream. It does music. It does station IDs, promos. Now, most churches don't have somebody to voice promos or do a local news report. So I built a little quote-unquote studio. And, and so you just copy-paste some text in there. And it's actually pretty good. I mean, the voices that I've selected for this, customers can use any voice they want, but works pretty well. And so just from running a few different servers like yours, Gordon, Hello Fred, Hello Franklin is still on it. Although paying customers now use their own API key for 11 Labs. You know, it's like all of a sudden, oh, it's $140 a month all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fair, because you are using those compute cycles. Now, what I'm personally now thinking is, well, in 2 years, maybe less, when all of these NVIDIA cards have to be replaced by the hottest new NVIDIA thing, I want to go buy a couple and use them at home.
Yes.
That's the ticket.
I was talking to Alex last night and I made the same point. I think the future of all of this stuff is clear. And this goes back. This is kind of what I was getting at with the Silicon Valley ickiness. The future of all this stuff is it's going to be local. You're going like everything is running to like hardware right now is moving from discrete GPUs and then a system on a chip. A system on a chip with a discrete GPU connected by a PCIe. It's moving to unified memory.
Yes.
With an APU or NPU built on the package.
Like Apple stuff, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The new Ryzen hardware is that way.
Mm-hmm.
The NVIDIA hardware, like in the DGX Spark, and that it's also that way. And the future of hardware in general is going to be, 128 gigs of RAM on an SoC, and it's just unified memory that's shared by the GPU and the CPU.
Yeah.
And when we get to that point, one thing I've been doing is I've been testing a whole bunch. We have for a project at work, my day job, I've set up a Ollama server, and we're testing some different models for some things.
Mm-hmm.
And so the model that I've been testing with right now is GLM 4.7 mm-hmm. flash.
Mm-hmm.
That model is fantastic. It is amazing at generating code. Like if you had 128 gig of RAM, unified memory, local machine running that GLM 4.7 model, oh, you could cook, man. With OpenCode, which is like an open source version of Claude Code,
mm-hmm.
it supports plugins just like Claude Code does. Like I think within two to 3 years, to local LLMs that rival what Claude and them are doing are going to be completely accessible.
And isn't this, we were actually talking about this last night in our group chat, isn't this where, I mean, the whole world has always centralized, decentralized. With this most recent 365 outage where the whole corporate world had no email?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's like, it's like a no-brainer. The whole internet was built for decentralized use. And everyone was like, oh, the cloud, put it in the cloud, because they didn't want to pay Dave Jones to maintain the servers. Though it'd be more, so much smarter. Look, I got the pitch from Amazon. But then when it goes out, like the whole world falls apart.
The lie of the cloud has been, and it's been the lie of big tech from the beginning. Do you remember when the cloud push first started?
Of course.
The big talking point was in this people, as an IT manager or sysadmin or anything like that, you heard this ad nauseum till you were blue in the face. You heard the phrase from sales guys, tech sales guys, moving to the cloud will allow you to convert from CapEx to OpEx.
Yeah. Yes. Except your OpEx is X10.
Yeah, exactly. But that was a lie.
Yeah.
Because you converted to OpEx, which only just means a monthly billing. You converted to OpEx. And then in the last 7 to 8 years, all the cloud providers have switched back to you have to buy a year in advance.
Yes, which
so
is
it's
CapEx.
Back to CapEx.
Yes,
again.
Yes.
They're liars. That we saw this with Intuit and QuickBooks Online. They were giving that product away. I mean, you could get that thing in the early days when they first launched it. You could get that thing for nothing. Like
it came free. It came free with your TurboTax. Yeah.
Buy a Pixel and you got a free. You know, it's like free 3 months of thing. Yeah. Yeah. You could get that thing now. It is through the roof expensive.
Yeah.
Through the roof, and it goes up on and the price increases on a predictable mm-hmm. schedule, and you're now in the treadmill. So that whole thing and the way it was being sold in the early days is, you know, hey, switch to the cloud version of your accounting software because it's so much cheaper. Big tech will lie to you all the time. And I think the story of AI is going to be that it is going to empower people, coders, because I don't know that AI is going to be super useful for much beyond code, you know, and tech oriented things.
Mm-hmm.
General knowledge stuff, I mean, it's still just kind of lame. But like outside of, you know, that special use case, it's going to allow technologists and coders and those kind of people to hyper personalize and bring their stuff back out of these big tech stacks.
Yeah, I mean, this going to be like, good
for that.
N8N, you familiar with N8N?
Why does that sound familiar?
It's an AI workflow builder.
Okay.
So you can connect a model to, you know, to a cloud model, something local to some other service. You know, it's you basically draw a little flow chart. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can buy their service so you can get the open source product. But I just see in general across all types of services, we have to move away from these gigantic services. I mean, Cloudflare will be the last one to go, and that's a complicated one just because of the nature of web traffic and, you know, just caching. That's complicated. But why in the world would you rely? I mean, this latest 365 outage, I mean, because we saw some bounces coming back from Marriott. Okay, Marriott.
Oh, it was everybody. Yeah, it was everybody.
I mean, this is when I tell Tina, it's like, bah, like the 365 took out corporate emails. So, well, like Marriott. And then she realized, oh, crap. Well, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge problem. This stops business dead in its tracks. Yeah. I just don't think it's useful anymore. And of course, ultimately, we have to eventually, I hope, go back to allowing people to run a small service from their house. You know, this will be problematic because of the asynchronous nature of cable, internet access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and legalities and all this stuff. But we have to decentralize it eventually because these big outages will only get worse and worse and worse, and life will just come to a grinding halt every single time.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I agree. You know, the good thing is like most people have available to them at their home
resources they don't even know exist.
Yeah, like a corporate, you could probably call AT&T. If you have AT&T fiber or some kind of cable fiber or whatever, you can probably call them right now and get like a quote unquote corporate plan
mm-hmm.
and get a static IP.
Yeah.
And all this kind of stuff. And you could just start serving things from your house.
Well, even with Tor, because that's what Start 9 uses and Umbral as well. I am perfectly happy accessing my Start 9 because I run a Nextcloud on it. It's fine. Oh, okay. You know, I start up Orbot Onion thing, whatever that is, on my phone. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, this is working just fine. You know, I can give somebody that address and then they can access it. You know, it's not like complicated NAT traversing and all this stuff. And of course, we have other ways to do that as well. But for simpletons or noobs or whatever, plebs, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. you know, that type of system that you can run yourself for your family. Now, of course, email is complicated because of SMTP blockage and there's all kinds of issues. But man, I love Void Zero, who has been running my email server for over a decade. I mean, it is, I just love the fact that my email works. You know, and we can stop certain things, we can hamper things, we can do all kinds of stuff to make it customized for me, for the way I want it to run and what I want it to allow and not allow, you know, and I don't know. It's just, it seems like we just went down this path and we all went nuts.
Hell yeah.
And so AI, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's still too expensive, but it'll start becoming available and I'll just put something here at the house and I'll just use that.
Well, I started, you know, I tried to make this point a while back, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it feels true to me that I feel like, you know, a lot of the expense of the local AI components right now, it's not just an accident of the market being in a bubble. I think it's also somewhat intentional because like RAM is incredibly expensive right now. You know, the RAM shortage is nuts.
Yeah, it is bad.
Well, who does that help? Big tech.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're the only ones that can afford it. I think it's beyond just a coincidence that these components are very expensive for home users to get their hands on. Because if they weren't, the demand for the big hyperscaler AI providers, I think, would vanish. I think that's part of the moat.
Is the
bubble induced expense.
Well, I think it's just poor planning. I don't know. It seems more like supply chain, like people just buy. I don't know if that's on purpose. It's just the way the beast works, I think. No one was thinking about it.
I don't know. I have a feeling that that part of the whole, you know, incestuous financial cycle between the big AI providers,
the cyclical finance.
Is to push the price up where it's out of reach of anybody that's not them.
I think, you know, maybe.
If you had DGX Spark level equipment that was $1,200.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, people would be buying them like hotcakes, but because they're $4,000, most people won't.
Yeah, but their whole business, listen, Silicon Valley's business model online is advertising. So they're in a whole new world that, you know, like, oh, we got to actually charge people for stuff. And yeah, people will pay $20 maybe for the chat bot, you know, but that gets old. It'll be the first thing to go. I think the world of software developers is quite small on a scale. So they're always going to try and find things that will, you know, the parlor tricks, you know, like art generation and song generation and stupid stuff that, you know, that it just gets old where they're still trying to figure out, well, it's human level intelligence. Yeah, okay. Artificial intelligence to me is like artificial flavoring. Tastes good.
Yeah.
We'll kill you. It will kill you at the end. So anyway, how does this fit into podcasting?
Yeah, I don't know that part does. Well, other than the fact, CC Lawton created a podcast index MCP server.
Yes, which we didn't have a show last week, so we didn't talk about it. Have you fired this up?
No.
Okay. And
I'm gonna put the the GitHub issue talking about it into the boardroom. I have not had time to fire it up, but he came back today and said he wrote a sample app.
Oh,
so it's a sample Android app that uses the uses this.
Oh, wow. Did he email us both about this? I haven't seen
He just posted in the issue.
Oh, okay.
In that issue as a reply.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be good to have people jump in and give this a whirl if anybody has time to do it. It's still on my to-do list. But how does it... My question... since I'm not familiar enough with MCP to know what the back end of the MCP looks like, is I'm not sure how it is translating. For those who don't know what MCP is, it's a model context protocol. It's basically it acts as a proxy between an AI agent and some API based service somewhere that you want to get information from. So it allows the, if you ask a question to an agent about podcast index data, having an MCP interface to the podcast index API would allow the agent to call and ask for that API information in a reasonable, sane way.
Mm-hmm.
It can intelligently talk to the API in the way that the API wants it to. The question I have, though, is that I don't know how those translations play out in practice. So are there scenarios where the agent would just blast the API with sort of like trying to grep it, you know?
What I mean?
Like, could it just flood the API with, you know, 1,000 calls a second? I don't know. So that's kind of what I need to kind of get my head around is given a certain set of inputs from the agent on the front end, how does that translate into API calls on the back end? What does that look like? Speaking of that, let's see, CLOS says, love sending a boost in the split to podcast index at getalbi.com errored. Well, the Albi Hub is up. That's online.
But I'm not seeing anything. In fact, nothing has come in except I just got a 22 sats from the from IPFS podcasting.
The podcast index Albi Hub is up. I mean it's up. It's running right now.
I don't know. But just because it's running doesn't mean it's receiving. You don't know.
Evidently.
You don't know.
Evidently. But anyway, that's an interesting thing that I think would be a nice thing to put out there into the world, that MCP server.
Well, I think, you know, if you expand upon that, because we kind of have some unique opportunities with the podcast index, with an MPC server like that, if somehow you can have another service that can be queried that accesses transcripts based upon the availability of a transcript, et cetera, then you can start to get some pretty interesting context searching for discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see some apps wanting to possibly experiment with that.
So this brings up the idea I had. That's a perfect
segue. I'm the segue king, baby. Yeah.
By the way, on the GitHub, on the namespace repo of the GitHub, I've turned my email notifications back on. I turned them off a few months ago because I was just getting flooded with stuff that, like, just people griping about things. I just could not.
What?
It was eating up all my mental space.
People just griping about stuff. Oh, no. Yeah.
So, but all that's calmed down. The namespace repo has calmed down. So I've turned email notifications back on, and I'm going to get back more engaged with that. So that's what that was about. James had mentioned that it was kind of a ghost town over there. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm not getting any emails from it. but that's back on. But anyway, the idea I had was we need a standardized way to attach our own metadata to a podcast that does not supply it. And so the reason this came up for me was that I subscribe. I think I've mentioned to it before. I subscribed to two shows from Twit. These are it's Windows Weekly and Security Now. And the reason I listen to these shows religiously because they apply both to my day job.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I listen to these podcasts, it's work, not pleasure.
When I listen to them, it's work, not pleasure, but that's a different reason.
It's for a different reason. And so the problem that I've had mostly with Security Now, not with Windows Weekly, but the problem I've had with Security Now for quite a few years now is that so the nature of that show is that Steve Gibson reads like entire articles on the show. And sometimes it's about a topic that I really just do not care about.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't apply to my job. And I really, really would like to skip over it.
Chapters.
Well, Twit has never published chapters and evidently
no,
never
because
will.
It's podcasting 2.0 and those guys are racist.
I think even before 2.0 chapters, he was like, I don't want people skipping ads.
That's a point. Yeah.
So, but then what happened was, I subscribed because I want to see those two shows supported. I want them to continue. So I subscribed to the private feeds. So those are ad free for a subscription per month amount. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe they'll put transcripts and chapters in these. No. So the private feeds do not have transcripts or chapters either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because they're using Simplecast, which does not support those.
Okay.
I think. So it could be a technical reason, but it doesn't matter what the reason. The long and short of it is that they do not support it. And so what happened was Apple released their automated transcripts. And then recently released, Apple Podcasts released automated chapters
mm-hmm.
based on the transcript. This was awesome for like 3 weeks because it was awesome and also unfortunate and weird at the same time. Because what happened was, even though I'm a paying customer that subscribes to the ad-free version, suddenly the non-ad free, the one with ads in it, automatically had chapters.
Hmm.
So I was using Apple Podcasts for a few weeks to get chapters in Security Now so that I could flip past all the stuff that I didn't care about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so nice. Wonderful. So I'm like, well, I guess even though I'm paying for it and the private feed doesn't support the things that I want, at least I'm getting what I want now.
Yeah,
and
you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, this was not going to last because Apple Podcasts allows you to turn that off
mm-hmm.
in your Apple Podcast Connect. And they clearly got in there and did that because suddenly now the chapters are gone.
Ugh.
So
because of the ads,
because of the ads that I don't hear anyway, because I already pay for it.
Yeah,
yes. For all those seasons.
Yeah.
All those reasons. So this got me think this has been annoying me to no end for so long. It got me to thinking.
I already like where you're going with this, brother. I can feel you. I feel it in my water.
you feel it in your water?
It's a Dutchism.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Gevoel het aan mijn water. Yeah.
So the obvious jumps into everybody's mind way to solve this, and I don't think it's the right way, but it is the one that everybody's going to think of first, is create a second feed. Create a second feed that references the enclosures of the original feed and put in your own chapters and transcripts.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically creating a proxy feed, almost like Feedburner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is a, for so many reasons, it's a bad solution because you're, that feed is going to get out in the wild. Now there's going to be another feed that people are subscribing to. It's just going to be a mess. And you don't want to get into that. A bootleg feed. Yes, Cotton Gin. So I just don't want to do that on principle.
Right.
It seems like, though, instead we have an opportunity here to create a standardized interface that podcast apps could accept. So a podcast app could allow you to put in the URL of a API that you run in some sort of way, or it not even has to be an API. It could be something else. I don't know yet.
A thingamajig,
but it could be a thing, a podcast thingamajigger. And the app would simply call the thingamajigger whenever it got a new episode and ask the thingamajigger for amendments, metadata amendments to that episode. So let's say Castomatic downloads an episode of Security Now. It takes some universally identifiable part of that episode, most likely the episode, the enclosure URL, and then passes it to the URL of the API that I gave to Castomatic and asks Castomatic for, and asks my API, is there anything that goes along with this episode or anything you want to do? Like, is there anything I need to know about this episode?
And that API, of course, will be run by John Spurlock, as as all extra bits are.
Yeah, this is a JS
project. Yeah, Johnny Player special.
So this keeps everything private. There's no public bootleg of a feed that's out there in the wild. And it's something I'm paying. So heads up, Daniel J. Lewis, this is aimed squarely at you also. Because pod chapters. Pod, if I pay, for instance, the way this could work using Daniel J. Lewis's podcast chat, pod chapters service, is I could have an account, a PodChapters account, and then get an endpoint specific to me.
Add it into your app.
Add it into my Castomatic. Then now every time Castomatic downloads a new episode, it takes the enclosure URL and asks PodChapters, my private PodChapters endpoint, asks it, is there anything else you want to add to this? And it could be just, you could return just XML. It could just be extra XML that comes back in and gets sort of virtually merged into the feed item with trans. It could, so you're going to get back from the PodChapters private API endpoint. You're going to get back a chapters tag and a transcript tag and all these kinds of things that you paid for. I would be paying for these things to be generated. But the app needs to know a standardized way to communicate with the service in order to call it and get a response.
So here's the obvious issues with a great idea. I am all for, because I had to realign my heart with people playing my podcast at 2.0 speed. With people using silent skippers, because I feel that that's my art and this is how I want you to consume it. But of course I have no say over how someone wants to consume my art. They may burn it to a CD. There's all these different things you can do. The minute you introduce a paid service, because this is no different than the app, I think, that James was talking about on Pod News today, or the past 2 days that skips ads, that reroutes around tracking URLs, including OP3. So to have that personally and to use that personally, completely valid. The minute this is a paid service, that paid service has a huge target on its back. Because the publisher, I feel, has right to say, hey, you're taking my content, adding on some value to it that diminishes my value. You understand what I'm saying? Because it will, if the minute you have this, one of those extra things in the API will be skip the ads. It's
oh, for sure. Yeah,
it's clear as day. So if you have that yourself, or let's say there's an open source app that does that, nothing can be done. Right. And it would be up to the individual, like you do, like, well, I'm paying for it over here, so I feel good about it. But that will be 1% of the people. Mm-hmm. So in theory, it's a great idea, but I just don't see how anyone can implement that in a commercial way, such as an app, even if you're taking donations or, you know, you have an extra full paid version, et cetera. I think that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah. I think the concept works.
Yes.
But the pod chapters example of a paid service may be the wrong example. Yeah, it would need to be something like, it would just need to be something that you provide on your own privately, yes. which almost guarantees this won't happen. Because just for
you. No, you will. You will use it. Just you will use it.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be, but there's tons of examples out there of podcasts that just, for whatever reason, they're just not giving you something that you want. And there, it's just an annoyance. And if you had a way to sort of amend the feed in a private way, because, you know, if you know how to do it, you're going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like what I will do, I will absolutely do this. If Twit does not work out some way with Simplecast or whoever their private feed provider is, if they don't work out some way in the near future to get some kind of chapters or something into these shows, I will just write my own podcast app and just do this all myself.
Yeah. I think that's what it comes down to. Because it's just sad. It's sad that we are in this, we're in this world. The podcast industrial complex, you know, it's like the and it's also a mindset, you know, it's like, oh, I have to have ads. It's the only way I can make money. Whereas I'm sure, it's proof positive that you will gladly pay for Windows Weekly.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
you'll gladly pay for it. But this whole, Windows Weekly should just add these things to their ad-free feed. That's the answer there.
Well, that's the answer.
That's the answer. And they can use a commercial service like PodChapters for that to do it. And they should.
Or maybe this particular feature is only available for private feeds. That would be another way around it. Like, if you're going to have like something like Daniel Day-Lewis's service or whatever. I don't, you know, he may want to not be interested in any of this, but something like that service could say, okay, we will provide amended XML information based on your own, like, you know, your own backend processing or whatever you want to add to it, but it's only going to be for paid, like, subscription podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to prove that you're paying for it first.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be like Simplecast or whatever. I don't know. I just feel like I hate solving problems for me in a one-off way and not like it. I always want it to be like a bigger open public solution to the problem that other people can do themselves. It's kind of annoying to have just some private thing you've rigged up that nobody else can enjoy. Because Because if I'm having a problem, I know that other people are having the same problem with other feeds and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe there's no way to do it in a way that makes...
Leo should just think about his customers. That's all. He doesn't care about his customers. That's the bottom line. If you're offering an ad-free feed, add in the bits people want. Fool.
So maybe it's not that... Yeah, maybe it won't work.
Just before I heard James talking about he's going to write up a new issue or proposal for podcast comments because I guess at PodFest, everyone discovered that, wow, people really like the comments on YouTube. So we have to have comments on podcasts. So be on the lookout for it is what I'm saying.
And we already have comments that work.
No, it's just going to be a JSON comment.
Okay, I guess I'll wait and see what he does. But I think Daniel J. Lewis had a pretty comprehensive JSON comments proposal already. You know,
yes, yeah.
I think he already wrote back end software and everything for it.
I'm just in general just not in agreement that people desperately want comments on podcasts. I'm kind of over that. You know,
is fun. Comments that live forever, not so much.
The YouTube comments, it's part of the entire video experience. You know, you're interactive with the screen. I find podcasts are just passive.
Comments on YouTube are
typically real time comments is really what they are.
Live streams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they suck.
What happens is on these live streams, people get in there and they just treat it like a chat room. They're talking to themselves. They're not even really interacting with.
Yeah.
It's like an ephemeral chat room.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I just want to make sure everyone was on the lookout for it because it's coming. But yes, I think there's many, many comment proposals / et cetera, chat proposals that have been put out.
Well, it's the other thing that's continuing, and I'm actively working on this, is the AI slop and quality control stuff. And there's a big thread on the namespace repo. We really need a better place for these discussions to happen. The namespace repo is, there's all kinds of stuff in there that has nothing to do with the namespace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I turned off the emails about it, is because it was getting like, people are talking in there about things that, or like index related and stuff. It's a big mess. But the other thread on there is just about David Marzel brought up podcast quality control and, you know, how to, in the AI slop and all that, in the junk feeds and everything. So I'm continuing to work on that. And I've got everything working. I just have to put the output side of it on, so where people can pull out the mark slop.
Cause I've been marking
the
it. I probably do about 10 minutes a day total. I just have it running, and I have it running in a window. I'm like, oh, kanji characters. Let me check. that's kind of my main, kanji characters. Let me see. Okay. Slop, 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 slop.
Oh, I'm seeing so much duplication. So much.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much is just spam or slop. It's an amazing amount. It really, truly is.
It's abusive.
It's so sad people do that.
But I think the general sentiment about you had said this too, is we should not be blocking stuff from being put on the server as of now. We should not be necessarily blocking stuff, but there should be some sort of like scoring system to help identify these things. And I agree with that. For now, it's okay. It's running fine. You know, it does cross a threshold though at some point where it becomes sort of it becomes where you're having to play self-defense.
Yeah,
because if we begin to get truly swamped and overloaded with junk content, we will have to begin to make we'll have to play self-defense to keep from having it cost us real money. And the, you know, storage, quote unquote, is storage is cheap, but not block storage.
Mm-hmm.
Block storage is disk storage is expensive. And these are, remember, you got to remember these junk podcasts are going into the database. You know, they're not living on object storage somewhere for 0.0001 cents. They're mm-hmm. going into a database, and that is real, you know, that's like a, you know, that's CPU cycles. That's, and database storage never goes down. It just expands.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, the thing, I mean, really, I've only been marking two different kinds of things. It's slop and spam, and the spam is worse than the slop.
Mm-hmm.
The spam is outrageous, and it would be nice to find kind of easier ways to identify, because it's like three or four clicks, you know, so you really have to look at the XML, and then you go see, okay, do you have an enclosure? And, you know, sometimes they go through the effort of putting an enclosure in that's an actual audio or video file, but usually they don't. And you know, so it's just, there's too much, we could shorten the spam identification cycle, I guess.
Okay. And I think the way this will work is when the feedback loop gets completed on this next round that I'm finishing, is that it'll, the human identified problem feeds will feedback into the LLM, which will generate description files of what the signs of spam feeds and low quality feeds are. Then that will feed back into marking.
Mm.
It will not automatically mark it, but it will feed back into like a score.
Yeah.
So that we can then try, it'll be easier to identify.
Good.
We'll work through it. We'll work through it.
I do like it. I like it. I built it on my Surface, so I could actually use the sound card, you know, hitting the P button to play. It's cool. That is definitely cool.
The interface is still a little, it's like, it's kind of slow.
Not that slow. Good for
cycling
me.
Cycling through with the up and down arrows kind of, there's a little bit of lag bothers
there, me. There is a little lag. You're right. Just a little bit.
I think it's like the UI updater loop is a little slow or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's vibe code, man. What do you
think?
Yeah,
baby, vibe code. Vibe code on our way to heaven. Let's thank some people, which will be real short on my end. We got we did get some route tests. Now, of course, this is I'm looking at the Keysend receiving side, so it doesn't mean we actually got these sats. Well, we got 1% of them. Salty Crayon 123 route test. That was from Podverse. We got Chad F. from Fountain with 100 sats. We have Eric PP. He used the Boost CLI for 3333. Here's some sats. Salty Crayon with 333 from Podcast Guru. Test Boost over Keysend. Yes, of course, Keysend works.
It does.
And then I hit the delimiter. So the sats have been pretty low lately. Yeah. Although I did see people streaming sats. Let me see. Let me just check the streaming sats here. Yeah. CurioCaster, Eric PP streaming away. Let me see. That seems to be the big one. Yeah. Yep. That's what we got. Okay. What do you have on your list?
Well, we got Buzzsprout $1,000.
Yeah, hello.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Buzzsprout keeping the vibe alive. Thank you very much, boys and girls from Buzzsprout. Appreciate that. This is value for value, this whole project. We're just sitting here trying to keep it alive.
Shot Kevin and Tom a note to see if they want to be on the show. It's been like...
It's been a long time. Yeah. It's been ages since we've had the boys on.
I know. Let's see if they come back.
Okay.
Well, look at here. RSS.com. Ben and Alberto. $1,010.10. That's 101010.
Nice.
Paula, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
The machines keep running for another month. Thank you as well.
Really Dave and Adam, this is from Ben. A binary boost corresponding to the number 42.
Yes.
The answer, as we look forward to 2026 and back at all the years before, we recognize that the podcast index in 2.0 has been the answer to so many things. Thank you, team at RSS.com.
Oh, thank you, RSS.com. Thank you, team. It's a pleasure to serve you.
Thank you, guys. We'll see. We got some boosts. Let's look back. I got instructions from Comic Strip Blogger. So I got
You have stuff to do.
He said, do not read last. Okay. He said he posted on the social not to read last week's boost because it could be interpreted as racist. So I'm going to skip it.
Oh, I'm looking at it now.
But I did read it.
Yeah, we read it. Yeah, it's funny. Okay.
We got a true fans anonymous 49.50.
Ooh, thank you very much.
That was for episode 247. It's 247 Aggie 5. Tone Wrecker through Fountain, 2265. He said, "Oh, this is like a haiku." He says, "Middle of the night, underneath desk rewiring, this episode plays."
That is a haiku. It's a loku.
Got more anonymous 4953 true fans. Thank you. Appreciate that. And here's the delimiter, Comic Strip Blogger. That was a short list.
Very short.
Comic Strip Blogger, 17,000 sets. Let me see. Let me make sure I'm following all of Comic Strip Blogger's instructions.
Yes.
Let's see what he said. Please read today's Bitcoin. Don't read the one from last week. I screwed up the URL in the Bitcoin gram. It should be okay. I got it. All right. So he says, 17,000 sets. He says, "Howdy, fellow AI users, Adam and Dave. Today, I want to recommend company 11labs.io, not only because it was found by two Poles born in Poland, but also because it has, apart from text-to-speech, incredible AI voice changer that offers, quote, full control over the performance, capture whispers, laughs, accents, and subtle emotional cues, unquote. So podcasting anonymously is finally possible."
Yeah. Wait a minute.
CSB, AI Arch Wizard.
Hold on a second. Is this real time?
I don't know.
I don't think it can't be a real-time voice changer. Interesting.
Full control over the performance capability. I don't know.
Well, I'm an 11 Labs user, and I am a power user. I use the API, and I think
that's power. Yeah,
yeah. I think they are very, very good. I think they're doing good things over there. It has changed radio. And it has changed podcasting, but radio, you know, for live streams, man, I use that all the time for promos and all kinds of stuff. You know, you can create music beds. It's great. It's very useful. Very, very useful.
Daniel said CSB should provide a rules.md file with his boostergrams. I think that's a good idea.
Yes. Thanks, Comic Strip Blogger, the AI Arch Wizard. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. We got some monthlies. We got Christopher Reamer, $10. James Sullivan, $10. Cohen Glotzbach, $5. Oystein Barra, $5.
Thank you.
He's coming on right after this.
He is, yeah. They always mutton meat and music.
Timothy Voice, $10. Gene Liverman, hey, Gene, $5. Michael Hall, $5.50. Thank you, Michael. New Media Productions, that's Todd and Rob, $30. Jeremy Gerds, $5. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Paul Salzman, $22.22.
Nice.
Always, Paul. Damon Kasajak, $15. Thank you, Damon. Silicon Florist, whoever you are, $10. Chris Cowan, $5. And Terry Keller, $5. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you all very much. And I can tell just by the numbers. I hear some people have upped their numbers. Thank you very much. That probably is because we were talking about keeping the podcast index running. And it can't just be running on only two hosting companies, because that's pretty much what it is these days. So all these smaller amounts, they are very much appreciated. So if you Get any value out of podcastindex.org. It's API, the work that is done, a lot of the work that Dave does. Please consider supporting us. You can go to podcastindex.org. At the bottom, there's a big red donate button. Support us there with your fiat fun coupons. I think now, because PayPal, they're going to start expanding. You'll be able to use other forms of digital money to send stuff to us, and we just appreciate it. Boosts, of course, are always appreciated through any of the modern podcast apps. And let me see. I got travel coming. No, I'll be here next week. We're here next week? We're here next week. Yes, I think we're here next week.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yep. Well, Boardroom, thank you very much for attending. Stand by for Øystein Berge with his mutton, meat, and music. Brother Dave, what you doing this weekend besides keeping warm for the big storm that we have coming?
You are going to get it worse than I am, evidently, because it looks like the ice storm is going to be moved north of us. So
it's north.
Yeah. It's like Birmingham was supposed to get like 2 inches of ice. We were like freaking out, and then now they've said, "Well, you're probably not going to get any." So,
okay. Well, you know about the exploding trees.
Is that where they? Swell up with water and blow up.
Extremely cold temperatures tonight. Please watch out for exploding trees.
Yikes.
Folks, if you hear loud cracks, stay indoors.
What is that?
Yeah, I think it's they just started some hype about exploding trees. I guess it can happen if it gets cold enough.
Sure. But,
yeah. So, they already predicted it would start today, and it hasn't started today, and maybe tomorrow. So, I'm not too worried, but we'll
Austin's
see.
You're not in those crosshairs, are you? You're a little bit set too south.
Yeah, but Fredericksburg is right on the cusp of it, but they were all freaking us out too. So, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. So,
watch out for your trees.
If we survive, we'll be back next week for the board meeting. Thank you all for being here for the one and only podcasting board meeting. We'll be back next week right here on Podcasting 2.0.
Podcasts are cool. You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Take me!